regardless of the outcome. Boost the positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers eating fresh shrubs.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth, where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. But don't forget, PIMP stands for Permaculture Is My Passion. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Long weekend, but I'm really, really good. This episode brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A, all your preparedness needs over there, which only fits because this weekend I was just at a preparedness festival, but we're going to talk about that in a minute. Also, if you wish to tip a pimp, go check us out on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. All of it, you can double up the speed, you can triple it up, whatever the case may be, but the best part about it, you can tip a pimp over there, and you can also leave some comments. You can pay us in the form of sats. Not even going to try to describe what a Satoshi, whatever they are. Anyway, they're a derivation of a Bitcoin, and you can drop it all over there like it's hot. Tip of the day, ask others where you're weakest. Examine thyself, okay? Yeah, we're going to get more into that and what that even means. But really, if you're struggling to find out where you're coming up short, now if you have family members that kind of point it out to you, that's one thing, because some family members are going to say it may be one of their problems or an issue you may have with them. But if you keep hearing it from family members, you might want to go to some of the friends or coworkers or whoever else you have around you. And you don't want to just ask anybody. Maybe hit the people that are going to be, I don't know, I'm usually the one to go look for the brutally honest people. And just tell them, hey, I'm looking to make advances in my life. If they can't give you anything off the top of your head, off the top of their head, maybe suggest, hey, these are four things, man, I really feel like I can use work on. Which one, if you had to pick one, which would it be? You know, do those things. Do a little bit of self-examination. We don't do enough of it. I've been talking a lot about that lately, and especially in some of these videos where we're saying, maybe get stuff from the left, maybe the people on the left get some from the right. But go out there and ask. Believe me, my wife, many of you already know her. She's the homestead honey, Michelle. And, you know, my son, they will point out things to you. And if your family's like mine, just in the nature of living, they're always going to point out things in which you can improve. Now, don't be shocked if everybody doesn't overnight see the improvement. But you at least need to get their take on it and then find out, maybe subtly, if for no other reason than for yourself, to figure out those ways to correct those things. And then maybe that'll be an inspiration for them to do the same thing. But don't do it with any expectation outside of trying to improve yourself. And I've been trying to do a lot of that lately. And just remember, when you ask those questions, you may not want to ask your family, but if those are things your family are talking about, ask some of your closest friends and find out where you can make the most improvements in yourself, especially in these times, because we're only going to get, I was at a preparedness festival this weekend. You know, the one I was just talking about, I got to speak at it and also got to do a lot of listening, and a lot of crazy things are happening, as you well know. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this program going into a lot of what that is, but every single aspect of your life, we have got to be trying to improve. All right, so let's just jump right into the farm news. We were at this festival this weekend.
Yeah.
And unlike the other ones that we typically go to, which are typically homestead festivals, this one was a little bit different, and it was strange for me because I started this whole journey from the preparedness world, so I speak their language. But what I found out this weekend is when you go to these festivals, it is totally, it's like a homestead festival, but it's a lot different as well. Because the areas of concern in the preparedness world aren't necessarily or at all the things that you're going to find at a homestead festival.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you'll get like one or two people teaching in a class like that are the prepper type, but not like the whole festival.
Well, what was weird about this is typically when we go to a festival, like a homestead festival or something like it, there's a fair amount of people that already know who you are. And, you know,
right.
It's kind of cool to go into a room where really nobody knows who I am.
Yeah.
Or very few people know. You know, my friend Ike, he and his wife came down from Pennsylvania. And, I mean, just wicked smart. You got to meet him.
Yeah, I got to meet Ike. He's cool.
Yeah,
so
man.
So are their puppies.
Yeah.
Allie and Gator. The first thing I said when I saw their dogs was, man, they look like alligators. And he said, well, that one's Allie and that one's Gator.
Yeah. Yeah, they were cute dogs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, also the kind of dogs where you don't start no SH, nope. There won't be no IT. Yeah, so it's those kind of dogs. So they're friendly. I'm sure if you do get stupid, they'd be singing a different tune.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty cool because I met Ike before and we become friends. We got so much overlap. And then, man, I mean, dude, he blows my mind every time I see him, man, because now he's dropping off three different brands of Scrapple, which I can't wait to get into.
Oh, wow.
Another Shoe Fly Pie, and then hook me up with some of these electrolytes that they use. I got to try some out of his jug. And I was like, you know, this is better than the stuff I was using, the store-bought stuff.
That's what I got in this jug.
What, that
electrolytes and some lemon juice.
The one that they gave you?
No, it's the same one as before, but I mean, I think it works.
Well, they drink it all the time. That's all they drink. And he had a gallon jug of it, and I was like, okay. They told me what was in it. You know, I didn't know what to taste. I thought it tastes better than that store-bought stuff any day of the week.
That water that you said... I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it. The one that starts with a G that's
like
German.
Like Steiner or something like that?
I don't think that's right. I don't think it's any better than or worse than I would do. I think, is the best tasting water. And it does, like, instantly get rid of your, like, hunger pains.
Yeah, so make sure you stay out of it. So
yeah, Dad, I've been buying my own.
Yeah, so that stuff, it ain't cheap, man. That's some highfalutin, high expensive water, and it's high mineral content.
Yeah, it's like $3 a bottle.
No, well, what I saw was $4 a bottle, but the point of it is, I mean, he came up with this homemade stuff. He and his wife drink it all day long, and when, you know, I mean, man, it's just pretty cool when you go to these things. It's almost like a homecoming. You meet people that you met before, and then you meet new people, but what the biggest thing is, and man, I'm hoping we find a way to bridge this gap, is that all the preparedness people out there know their stuff about preparedness.
Yeah.
But at homesteading festivals, you find out that they don't necessarily know what the prepper people know. And the prepper people don't know what the homesteading people know. Because as I'm talking and I'm giving my class, it's basically how to feed yourself for free. You know, in a preparedness community, believe it or not, most of the people in that room had no idea what I was talking about. The second day I did the class, people were, I don't know, spreading the word around. The second day I did the class, people were like, wow, I had no idea about this stuff. I'm asking people to raise their hands beforehand. There was only one person in that class in the second day that even had heard of permaculture before. So I was like, okay, I got some fertile ground here. So let me see if I can... You know, and by the time it was all said and done, I like to think that maybe I did a good enough job to make the case as to why people in the preparedness community, like I said before in that video, I know these people. This is where I came up. This is where I got my start. And I know where the holes are in their game. And it was pretty cool to hear people walk up and say, man, you gave me a whole new way of thinking about this. Man, thinking about resupply this way, I never thought about it. And so that was really, really, really helpful. That, you know, I find myself in a place where, you know, nobody speaks this language.
Right.
Or very few. And then all of a sudden, we're walking out of there, and it was like, oh, ding, 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 ding. I couldn't believe some of these wonderful comments that people made on the way out of there. So it was, I mean, it's a really good turnout. I do want to tell y'all also about William Forston. There's another guy out there. He's a nuclear expert by the name of Steve. Got to spend a lot of time with him talking. He was Steve was one of the keynote speakers, and he's a nuclear engineer, and he knows where basically all the bodies are buried in a lot of these nuclear powerhouses. So in fact, it was really awesome. That last day he gave me this big green book of nuclear preparedness.
Yeah. The one sitting on the counter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, the foreword written by Edward Teller. I got to read it a little bit last night, and I'm like, okay. it's stuff like this that people in the homestead community don't know anything about.
Right.
As I'm sitting here looking at this and I'm like, okay, some of this I know, a lot of it I don't. And I'm thinking, wow, the overlay, why do we have these stupid distinctions between preparedness, permaculture, and farming? I don't get it. And I'm going to do the best I can in this podcast and all the way around, whether I think what I'm going to do is talk preparedness at the homestead festivals,
yeah,
and talk about homesteading at the preparedness festivals.
That seems like a good idea.
I think that's what I'm going to do, because I think a lot of homesteaders do have they do have some understanding, but believe it or not, many of them do not.
Well, they have an understanding that they need to start, but not necessarily at what point that they are like prepared. You know what I mean?
Or
like
their
understanding that, but their understanding of, okay, I'm prepared now, is a bit skewed. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, them, for the most part, them growing food is them thinking that, okay, I'm prepared now.
Right. But you have no backup if you had no access, whether a freak weather event, whether it be, you know, Uncle Sam or anybody else comes in, or some calamity unfolds and, you know, under the NDAA, they're in there trying to take your tomatoes or whatever it else it is you have. So if you don't have cachets, you don't have things put back. I mean, I want to really encourage everybody out there in the homesteading world, give some thought into preparedness, because like I said, I was in the room with William Forstchen. And if you don't know, that was the guy that wrote the book One Second After.
Right.
I just heard a reference in another podcast about that today. The guy, of course, I don't agree with him on everything. There's a fair amount that I don't agree with him on. But once again, where we do have positions of overlap, I can say, wow, he really called it in One Second After. There's other things where I think he's all wet, but that's not to say you dismiss everything he says.
Right.
You know, that's the mark of a thinker, is you can examine anything without, and being able to know what you can absorb that's useful. There's a whole lot he wrote in his book that everybody should give some unbelievable thought to, especially right now.
Yeah.
But for the most part, a lot of people in the homestead space don't want to hear about it.
Right.
There's likely people tuning out right now because they don't even want to hear this. But this is why I'm highly encouraging everybody out there. If you get a chance, go check out the preparedness festivals. Go check out the homesteading festivals if you're strong in one area and not the other. Because what I'm finding out, and I'm throwing a wide net here, because there are some people in the preparedness space that absolutely understand the notion of resupply and growing your food.
Jack Spierko.
Yeah. Prime example. Bobby Spaggs.
Yep.
Also, you know, there's others out there that understand how to marry the two, but so many people feel like, okay, I'm growing my food, I got a couple of weeks extra to put back. Well, I think you're missing a boat on a couple of things here.
Right. Yeah. So like whenever I do permaculture consultations, the first thing I always do in the order of operations is make sure you have at least 6 months of food put back before you start with anything else on your design. Make sure you have a place where you can put 6 months of food and keep it protected.
That is absolutely wise and admirable.
And well, speaking of consultations, there's one potentially coming up in New Mexico if other people are on board, basically. So if you're needing a consultation and you live in near Las Cruces, New Mexico, so like West Texas, maybe Arizona, I don't know how far that is away, or New Mexico, email me at permapasturesfarm@gmail.com, and we'll try to schedule something up. But that'll be cheaper than hiring me just to come to your property. We can kind of do a Jeff Lawton and knock out a little area or region at a time.
Yeah, so, yeah, that makes sense. So there's some other people that do that same sort of thing where they hit a bunch of people in the same area. So, yeah, there's that. But, you know, when we get down to brass tacks, when it comes to these consultations, even if you don't pay for a consultation, get a second opinion about your place from somebody who has a dispassionate view of it.
That's what I was doing today with Deborah. She's a listener to the Pimpcast and all that. That's what I was doing today at like that call I had at 12. She sent me a bunch of photos through a Google Drive. Some of them were aerial, some of them were like on the ground and stuff like that, and we just kind of talked through what she was doing, some of the problems that they were having, mostly water issues with the 4 inches of rain they get in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
It's Cruces.
Cruces or yeah. Cruces?
Cruces.
I don't know. I'll find out when I get there.
Yeah, they may say it some other way. I mean, you go to Oklahoma, and Miami, Oklahoma is actually Miami.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, or El Dorado, Kansas. Everybody else would call it El Dorado.
Yep.
Or, you know, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where we call it Lancaster.
Or DeKalb.
Yeah.
Siri says DeKalb.
DeKalb, yeah. Siri can't get nothing right.
Yeah.
All right, so other farm news. Hey, I just want to put an exclamation point on that, y'all. Please, cross-pollinate. If you are not in the preparedness world, you need to think about it. I mean, I'm not criticizing anybody on either side of the coin. I am encouraging you. When you got people like Dan Bongino and a number of others out there who aren't exactly known to be in the preparedness realm, and they're saying, look, something is going down. Get yourself prepared. This is so far outside of their wheelhouse of what they talk. You really need to give some serious thought about it. That's why I suggest if you need anything you can't grow or check out Heaven's Harvest. You get 10% off with promo code PERMA. So let's talk about other things. And believe me, this is right on the heels of preparedness. I was out there today cleaning up the barn, which is now, I'm going to call it the compost barn.
Yeah.
And I made two more stalls out there because I'm definitely going to need them. I made two more stalls because it is nonstop compost making out here. And if you think for a minute that that doesn't fit into your preparedness plan, then I got news for you. Because what was one of the biggest problems we had that everybody felt like they needed? It was nitrogen-based fertilizers.
Right.
You know, because of that. And you thought they were bad before. They're about to get much worse. Well, how do we avoid all that, son?
Don't get dependent on them. Just start growing making your own compost and providing your own fertilizer with what's on your farm already.
And fertilizer in the classic sense is not what you think when we talk about it. I am not talking about putting out NPK. I'm talking about letting my microbes go to work for me in the soil indefinitely, providing everything I need for that plant. And those are my allies. That's why we are making unbelievable compost. And that's why we are teaching it as much as we possibly can over there on Patreon.
But saying a plant only needs NPK, we're finding out, like, is the equivalent of saying, like, a human only needs, like, protein, carbs, and fat.
Yeah.
Like, don't, like, forget all the micronutrients or any of the salt or anything like that. That's the equivalent.
And the cool thing about putting those microbes out there, getting them in the right balance, most gardens are always going to be, if you mess with it too much with any disturbance, it's always going to be bacterially dominated,
right?
Which may not be what you want unless you're growing like brassicas and stuff like that. So in other areas, you're going to want at least a 50-50 balance of fungal to bacteria in most cases. But here's the beauty about it is that the exudates from your plant basically tell the fungi and the bacteria, hey, here's my shopping list. If you guys want food, if you want these exudates from me, here's what I need. And so instead of just having available NPK, they're getting trace amounts of, let's say, cyanide. No, that's not a bad thing when it's in a plant available form.
Right.
Or barium, strontium. You know, the stuff they're spraying out of the clouds right now, but they're putting it in a plant available form. You know, God knew what he was doing.
They're also locking up too much of it, too. Like those toxic, those heavy metals and stuff like that.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
The stuff that they're spraying out of the sky.
Right. Those guys now, these are why they're your allies. I'm glad you pointed that out, is that all these other things that we don't want, these guys are tying up through the composting process.
Yep.
They're taking those negative metals and whatever else is coming out of there. This is why if you're on that, like Jim Garrish wrote that book, Kick the Hay Habit.
Yeah.
We're encouraging you to kick the fertilizer habit because things are not only for preparedness reasons, but because you will produce light years better stuff if you can get yourself off, you know, anything you can do to keep them from having sway over you. Part of it is if you got to go to their stores, I mean, to some extent or another, we all do, but as much as you possibly can, if you don't need their fertilizers. But when you get on those fertilizers, which essentially are salts, it's hard to get off of.
It's like getting on painkillers.
There you go.
Which they make also.
Yeah, well, you can get off of that stuff, but it's going to, you know, it's going to take some work. So in addition to other things going on around here, we got the typical chores. And folks, those of you that are considering this life or considering getting involved in the farm space in any way, you got to realize this. This is where I think a lot of people kind of lose their beans in this thing. It looks like an idyllic life, and you only see it from a YouTube advantage, some people.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get into it, and you realize, man, there's a whole lot of mundane tasks. That's what there is a lot of. You're always, when you farm the way we do, you're always, every morning, son, why don't you give them a rundown? What's going to happen every single morning?
Every morning, we wake up, meet in the kitchen, and then we go get stuff ready for the animals, and then we go move all the animals if they need to be moved or take care of them however we need to. Mom goes and waters the high tunnel. Dad is usually checking on his compost. If there's a video, then I go up and edit it. But, I mean, it's usually like the same. Well, the first part of the morning is the same thing every single day.
But
plus or minus people, depending right. on what's going on.
Everything in the morning in terms of chores is, it's going to be a derivation of what you did the day before.
Right.
But this is important. The afternoon, now, this is where the day gets different, because after those things are done, then there's no 2 days that are alike. But people need to get, you need to understand, if you're considering this lifestyle, there will be repetitive work. If you can't do that sort of thing, then maybe this ain't, you're not really cut out for it. So I just want to make sure, you know, I point that out, because there are record numbers despite, you know, I was on there. I was on there with one of the.
Hold on. Before you move on, it is repetitive work, but it's the same thing as like learning a new language or something like that. You're having to put in small pieces every single day to learn this new language. We're having to put in small pieces every single day to improve the pasture and increase right. So, I mean, there is like, it's not just repetitive work just because there's repetitive work to do. There is like a goal to attain.
Yeah. And if you, you know, if you're going to be one of those people that just put your animals out forever and a day, and you right. just look at them like what Greg Judy calls the Columbus method, mm-hmm. you go find them later on in the fall, you just stick them out there. Well, you're going to have messed up pastures. No two ways about it. So we keep everything holistic. We keep everything moving, and everything stays moving, and everything keeps improving. So that's yeah. exactly what we want. All right. So other farm news, still on my study program. I did finish my speed reading course, and that is quick learning. Go check that out. If you, I would recommend it. It was like $200, and my reading last time I did my test, I went from like 260 words a minute to 840 That's is cool. where I ended. And if and then you can continue to improve. Now, the thing is, I got to make sure I'm in the right mindset. I got to make sure, because the books I'm reading are not light fiction. You yeah. know, I'm reading, like right now, I'm reading Trees of Power by Kiva Silver. Mm-hmm. This is information I can't just lightly read. I got to know it. So there's ways in which you can, it's quick. By the way, K-W-I-K. That's the way you spell quick learning.
Oh.
Anyway, you want to check that out. That's what I use. So anyway, I'm very pleased with it. It does require something out of you. If you think, oh, well, I'm just going to kind of skate through this. No, there's a lot of mental work that is required. So if you think this is just, oh, I just learned a couple of techniques and I drive on. No, there is a lot required of you. So that is going to take some doing. Just want to say, you know, this, I love to teach what I know. I don't know everything, but I love to teach. And being out there this weekend, man, it was really cool, but I got to say, what I love even more than teaching is learning. Mm. And just remember, if you learn a new task, y'all, try to teach it, because when you teach, you learn it twice. That is a fact. So you become much more adept. The guys I train as butchers, that's why I kind of push them in the deep end as far as teaching, because that's when you really, really get to learn it, is when you know you can teach it to someone else. So everybody that's learning new skills, keep in mind that that is of profound importance. Now, before we go into Pastor Lon, I want to remind you, Kentucky Sustainable Living, October 28th and 29th. We're going to be there. They got a VIP dinner, and the money is going to help out Vets for Child Rescue. In addition to that, don't forget,
yeah,
we got some new shirts supplied by my man Ike. 100% of all proceeds we'll go to that festival in Kentucky to Vets for Child Rescue. So that's going to be more money that, I mean, just incredibly generous.
So that, just to be clear, that means if you pay $25 for a shirt, how much of that is going to Vets for Child?
$25.
All right.
Yeah. Unlike a lot of other, unlike a lot of other organizations out there, folks, if you, as a little side note, you know, check out where you're sending your money, whether it's Feed the Children or some of the others. There are websites on there that will show you how much money actually goes to the cause.
Yeah.
You would absolutely lose your mind if you checked out a lot of these organizations and find out actually how much goes to the cause.
Yeah.
So with that said, let's go to the homesteading pastor, Pastor Lon.
Hello, everyone. This is Pastor Lon. I got one verse of scripture I want to share with us today. It's in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Think about this for a moment. Not everything that weighs you down is yours to carry. I ask you today, what weight or what sin are you allowing to hold you back from becoming the men and women of God that God desires you to be and that your family needs for you to be? See, the only way we can live an efficient Christian life is to lay aside the weights of this world and the sins of this world so that we can run efficiently for Jesus, for our families, and for ourselves. So I encourage you today, let's allow Jesus Christ to lighten our load by casting our cares, our sins, and our burdens upon Him so that we can run this race of life with patience and endurance.
That's one of the first Bible verses I ever learned when I was a kid, which is strange, you know, considering the dysfunctional house I grew up in, which I'll cover here in a little while. That was one of the first Bible verses, you know, wherefore seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Yeah. So, that's one of those verses that keeps me on my toes also. You got to really mind your behavior because you are there are people watching everything we do.
Yeah.
So that's really why, you know, also in terms of podcasting, why I try to be kind of careful. I mean, I don't use profanity on purpose. Now, am I going to come down like a ton of bricks on others that do? And I hate to even call it profanity because what we call profane, it was the only reason it was made so is because some British lord decided people were dogging him with that word, so that's all of a sudden why it became profane.
Joel and Sean actually just had an episode about it on Kill the Mockingbirds.
Yeah.
And Joel talked about it.
Yeah, Joel, I remember talking about it individually. I would definitely add to it. I mean, what we consider to be profane, but the point I guess I'm trying to make here is that I think I am entirely, just like I can't stand cliches, even though we all use them to some extent or another. But when you hear somebody like all the women for a while there were saying, amazing, this is amazing. You know, it takes no imagination whatsoever to say the word amazing. So I view it the same exact way in terms of how I speak. Now, I'm not saying I haven't slipped in the past and said a thing or two, but I'm just saying generally, if you're a comedian or anybody else and you have to constantly use those words, it tells me you lack imagination, because it's one thing to go say blankety blank blank, and it's entirely another to tell someone, in the words of Samuel Adams, may your chain set lightly upon you. Which one took the greater imagination?
Yeah.
To say blank you or may your chain set lightly upon you?
Yeah.
You know, so that's where, you know, it's also a matter of originality. We're trying to, not trying to get on my high horse here. I'm just trying to say that, you know, we do try as best we can to be a little more original, you know, and we don't always get it right, but we try. All right, so bad news, good news section. For every one bad news, we're going to give you two good news. Now, check this out. The Indians, basically said they're shutting down the pipeline to the rice. I got an article right here from Reuters.
The pipeline to the what?
To rice. Oh. I did not know that India produced 40% of the rice out there. This is why India rice export is so important for global trade.
Wow.
Well, I had no idea they were responsible for 40%. And they said, look, we got to feed our people, man.
Yeah.
We're going to have a mess on our hands if we don't feed our people. But they, 40%, man. I mean, we're talking like they look after Bangladesh, Angola, Cameroon, Djibouti, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Kenya. I mean, there's a whole gang of them here. Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. They all buy their stuff from India.
Wow.
And India said no. So now add to that what's happening in the Midwest right now. Droughts and everything.
Yep.
Okay. Corn, wheat,
Southwest
all that.
Southwest too.
Yeah. So everywhere you turn around, y'all, you either got to be a big time coincidence theorist, or you could go ahead and say, well, you could throw up that conspiracy theorist thing. But I mean, I don't know what it takes at this point to get somebody to realize, okay, what are they doing in the Netherlands? They're telling us nitrogen is a bad thing. Do you know what 70% of this atmosphere is?
Right.
And people are just buying this. And now here it is, yet another data point. You got Ukraine, which was the breadbasket. You know, look what's happening there. Look what's happening in America. Look what's happening in South America. Look what's happening. I mean, every single storage grain crop is being compromised. So, folks, once again, back to that making your own compost thing. I think I just provided another couple of good reasons why you might want to consider that.
I saw a video today. You were talking about, like, if you're not awake now, I don't know what you're doing. I saw a video today, and it was this old-timer talking about being awake. And he said it's like putting on a pair of glasses, but there's rules to the glasses. You can't take them off, and you can't make anybody else wear them.
That is profound, really.
Yeah.
That really is profound. What's troubling, though, is that every demarcation point where I think people will say, okay, I've had enough, the powers that shouldn't be continue to cross those lines, and still nobody cares. Everybody kept saying, okay, when they impose this on the children, people will just lose their minds. Did they?
Nope.
They said, we're doing this to your kids. We're going to show them how to be trans testicles. We're going to chop their junk off. In addition to that, we're going to go ahead and jab them up, or they ain't going to school here, or do like they did in Australia, where they basically would lock the kids up in stadiums and nobody does anything. I thought, okay, everybody said that's the demarcation point. And then I hear this other stuff in America. Well, if they come after the guns, that, you know, I got news for you. I'm going to make myself a very unpopular person with what I'm about to say right now. I don't believe we know what the bottom is. All the people that are out there saying, well, they'll never get my guns. Okay, let them not eat for 3 days. And I guarantee you those same people who are not prepared will hand those guns over in a minute to get themselves and their kids fed.
The people that are saying out loud that, well, when they come for the guns, well, they're the first ones that are going to give up the guns.
Absolutely.
They're absolutely the first ones to give up the guns.
Or the ones that go say, I'll go hunting if things get bad enough. Right. And I'm like, have you ever been hunting before? You ever killed anything? You ever spilt blood? I mean,
well, I'm sure they have, but under controlled, like whenever nobody else was hunting for survival under like controlled environments.
Almost universally, the people that have said that to me have almost no experience at hunting. None. Or, you know, I'll go out and take what I want. Well, those are people I'm not going to be friends with. If that's your solution is mayhem, I don't want to know you.
There are, I'll give you a little bit of behind the scenes access here. There are tactical channels on YouTube that I know for sure have never been hunting one time.
I knew a guy in the preparedness movement. I won't say his name. I knew him back in the day. He would come out there in the tactical gear.
Yep.
Had a, you know, he looked the part. Man, did he look the part. Claimed he had been some schools or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And had never procured food in his life from the wild. And I'm like, okay. But he had, even myself at first, he had us all fooled. And I'm realized, okay, he was good at making fire, but he had no idea how to do anything else.
Yeah. But also, I think this could be ignorance talking, but it seems like a lot of people focus on the fire aspect when you should be kind of thinking like, how do I do this without the fire, right?
Very good point, son, because here's what you learn, and this is what I tried to, here's what a lot of people in the preparedness circles don't get, is that as a soldier, you're going to have a cold camp every night. You are never, ever going to have a fire in a tactical environment. It gives away your position for two reasons, because you might be able to see it and you might be able to smell it.
You're definitely going to smell it at that point in time. If it's to that point, you're definitely going to notice a campfire, like a whiff of it.
Right. So you have got to find very clever ways. There's ways to mask some of this stuff, but you have got to find very, very clever ways to mask these things. In these mountains, it's a little bit easier to do because, well, you can go to High Points and I'm not going to give away all the tactics up here, but the point being is, yeah, all the things like the headlights. Do you know how many people, if things jump off, are going to get smoked because they can't walk around at night without these idiotic headlights that destroy your night vision?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand if you're in a regular environment, yeah, but you had better get used to walking around at night. That was one of the hardest things that people learn when you first become a soldier off the street, is that there, yeah, people got the red lights, but even in a tactical environment, you only use that red light under a poncho where it cannot be seen.
We can see that red light from across the,
that's right,
like down the mountain that's blinking on that electric fence on the neighbors.
Absolutely right. And that's why I'm saying a lot of people are going to get smoked if things go sideways, because they have no idea from a tactical standpoint that you, even if you have a red light, you don't use it unless you're under a poncho. If you have a flashlight, if you can't get around at night without a flashlight and you turn that on, you screwed up your position and everybody else's. Now, there was a guy I just watched a video from. It was a short that came up. And he was saying, you know what? A lot of you people with all that fancy gear, you're going to die when things jump off.
Yeah.
Because number one, you don't even know how to use it. You've never used it. And in a tactical environment, you're going to realize that you don't use lights.
Yeah.
You don't use lights. You don't turn on headlights. You don't do any of those things. I hate to beat that dead horse, but that was, even in the preparedness worlds, whenever they do the campouts, man, that was one of my pet peeves.
You notice soldiers don't go spotlighting, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, they don't. That's one thing you don't do, and that's why you need to have some tactical awareness. A lot of you folks in the prepper world, and definitely those in the homestead world that don't understand these things, cell phones, that will get you killed. Anything giving off light will get you killed in the wrong environment. Look, y'all, I'm not talking about Mad Max. I know I went a little sideways here, but that is one of the biggest pet peeves I have, are these stupid headlights. I remember when everybody started wearing them, and I'm like, man, can we please? And then they always shine it right in your eyeballs right after you got your night vision. Every single time. All right, so good news. Let's talk about that. Okay, this is going to be absolutely fantastic news, especially to all of our listeners in Arkansas. It is possible to regrow damaged or destroyed teeth. Japanese researchers have found a way.
Dang.
Yeah. So that's my, hey, that's a shout out to my boy Jason Conley over there in Arkansas. Dang. Yeah. So,
man.
Yeah.
To our British cousins.
Yeah. Hey, yo, yeah. There's a whole lot of Brits that are listening right now, okay?
Dad, so, you just insulted a state that ain't that far away.
Yeah.
At least the Brits got across an ocean.
Yeah, but you know what? I think they'll get the joke here, you know?
Man.
You know, there's this universal joke about Brits and their teeth and all this and that.
They have that for us, though.
Brits got their teeth. They just ain't put in the right places, you know?
Well, the Brits have the same stereotypes for the Americans.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah. I mean, no doubt about that.
Yep.
I've known a lot of Brits, and, you know, I've worked with a lot of Brits in the Army. Man, they were wonderful folks. They were very polite. Loved them, man. They were wonderful people. But, yeah, you can regrow. The Japanese come up with this way. So all of my brothers in Arkansas – and a lot of these guys, I mean, I know a lot of people in Arkansas, of course, is not, you get the joke.
Hey, Dad, we can just go a few miles into these mountains. We don't have to go all the way down to Arkansas.
Well, you got a point there. You find six, yeah, you get, find 32 people in these mountains, you get a full set of teeth. So, yeah. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of good stuff out there for you. So, hey. Hope is on its way, y'all.
Man.
So all you folks in Arkansas, you know when they say it's growing teeth, I'm sitting here reading the article. I'm like, okay, at what point do they tell them to stop?
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You're going to have like one that's like a foot long? Yeah, I mean, how do you get them to stop? So, okay.
Maybe your bite pattern fixes that.
Some other good news out there. My boy Ike, he's going to understand this one here. RFK Jr. did a couple of, I mean, he's done some bombshell interviews, and he's been highly criticized about it. But right now, he's RFK Jr. is getting slammed by the New York Post political reporter. Well, he basically fired back for implying that he has anti-Semitic views on the engineered pandemic. Well, what he basically said, I mean, and it's, he said it was ethnically targeted to spare Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese people. Oh. Now, they left out the Chinese people.
Yeah.
But he said, yeah, that's what the evidence shows, is that this virus was wiping out everybody but the Chinese and Ashkenazi Jews. So sure is funny. You want to know who's calling the shots out there? Find out who you can't criticize. Ask Kanye West.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think he did it for different reasons. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, you can criticize anybody. Just find out who you cannot criticize. I'm just going to leave it right there. There's some people out there who are going to see between the lines, but I'm not, and don't think I'm like, well, I love when they say anti-Semitic. You know what? There's a whole lot of other Semitic people out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's other, it ain't just Jews that are Semitic people. I mean, but they don't use that when you're talking about other Semites.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I just thought I'd put that out there. So far as good news, you know, I think it's really awesome that Robert Kennedy is firing back saying, look, hey, you people, you left out the Chinese part, but because I put the Jews in there, now you want to come down on me like a ton of bricks?
I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for him to, yeah.
I don't trust him.
Yeah. And then also, like, he supported Hillary Clinton during the whole, yeah.
There's, I mean, Obama, I don't trust him. I mean, I don't think all these leopards, I mean, did he have a Damascus moment? I don't know. But at the end of the day, I will, if somebody that I'm suspicious about says something good, even if a notorious liar tells the truth, it's still the truth.
Right. I'm just, you can recognize it as the truth, but still not trust the dude.
No, I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. I definitely don't trust Trump. I don't trust pretty much, the only politician that I trusted to any measure at all was Ron Paul. Outside of that, every last one of these, even Rand Paul, I mean, he goes sideways on some stuff. And there's some things I can be highly critical of him about. I will applaud this man or anybody else when they do something I think makes sense. I just love the fact that he made his case and he's standing by it. He's saying, yeah, here's what the evidence shows. Chinese and Ashkenazi Jews, strangely enough, are not affected by this COVID virus. Huh. You think we ought to examine? Ooh, who might have been behind this?
Yeah, who's an Ashkenazi Jew, Dad?
Well, a lot of them out there. I mean, you are too. So am I.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So anybody that wants to say, oh, you're bashing Jews or whatever, well, look a little bit at my heritage too. So,
but yours also. Like, yes. Yours meaning the listener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a, and believe me, there are ways in which we could prove this. But I'm saying you're dogging my Jewish background. I love how they say, oh, you're dogging Jews because you talked about George Soros. George Soros doesn't even identify as a Jew.
Right.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm sick and tired of some classes of people being beyond reproach and other people. You know, I got no problem at all with the general people that come from a Jewish faith. I got a problem with some of the things their governments do.
Yeah.
You know, what is the most decorated vessel in American history? USS Liberty. Folks, go look up what happened to the most decorated ship in U.S. history. Go look at who knowingly did it and go look at the fact that you don't know about it. Maybe we'll talk about that in the future. When we get back, we'll get straight into it. Yeah, I think I like that song.
Yeah.
I think I like that. Talking about tearing down people that everybody has held up.
Yeah.
Andrew Tate, yeah, I'm right there with him. I don't think Andrew.
That's one of Joel Thomas's newest songs.
Yeah, yeah. So Van Tesla, Joel Thomas over at Kill the Mockingbirds, also Sean Chris.
We got another one of his new songs for the next transition.
Yeah, so we've changed up the music a little bit, and we're trying to see what we got to do to go back to the Gap Band in the beginning of this. I love Joel. I love what he does. But, man, I think Gap Band kind of really, really, really set the tone for this show.
If y'all want Dad to sing in this intro, we need you to leave a review, a 5-star review on any listener you're listening on.
Not sure that's going to happen, son. We're going to try to find a way to bring it back in there, but we may have to do something slick. All right, before we get into it, y'all, $50 off EMP Shield. With promo code PERMA. And once again, y'all, EMP Shield. Look, I am not trying to go to the club anything like it. I just need to get to my crib. I need to get to Billy's Jungle Palace of Love. That's the only place I need to go to. I'm not trying to go anywhere else. That's why I need it for the vehicle. But for the house, the number one threat, especially if you live in Tornado Alley, is going to be lightning.
Yeah.
25,000 guarantee. If the lightning gets past that thing and blows up your stuff, 25 G's. That's what they'll cover.
Or apparently if you live here too now, because all the lightning storms we have now.
Didn't used to be a problem.
No.
Didn't used to be a problem. All right, so let's get into the topic. All right, I'm going to tell y'all a story, and it's going to hopefully make sense. I told this story briefly to the people out there at this last preparedness festival. When I was a kid, when you're my age, or when you came from where I came from, look, full disclosure for those that are new, I come from a family of, you know, I'm basically the son of convicted felons. They were incarcerated for bank robbery.
We have an episode, the permaculture pimp daddy.
So growing up in that environment, myself and my five brothers were sent to live with our grandmother. And she had just been recently widowed. I'm talking like she was 70 in her 70s. And here she is. And when I say recently widowed, think about this. Your daughter just got thrown into the joint for bank robbery. Your husband dies. And then a month later, here it is. You got six of your grandchildren coming to live with you because nobody else in the family would take us. So here we are. And imagine you're a single 70-year-old woman looking after five boys. Well, you know, we subsistence ate. We ate to live. There was nothing real fun about the food we ate. But as a kid, I didn't know any better at the time. I didn't know that it was unusual for us to, for a really good meal, to the only meat we ever ate was, believe it or not, boiled gizzards. And every once in a while, there'd be some chicken. But believe me, there was a lot of vegetarian meals thrown up in there with very... Meat was not really on the table. And so there was a number of times growing up where food just wasn't all that plentiful. So it was very indelible on me. And I want to say I must have been in third or fourth grade. I remember being taken to an apple orchard. And for me, because we never went anywhere but to church and to school on the school bus. So to go on a field trip back in those days, you couldn't sleep the night before. Not for me, you couldn't. Whether it was going to, it was one of only two field trips, well, three field trips really as a kid that I remembered. And we were going to an apple orchard. I remember being on the, being so excited the night before, I couldn't go to sleep. And then the next day at school, we get on the bus, we go to this orchard, and I remember like it was yesterday, this big red barn. And then we're in Amish country in Pennsylvania at the time. And these giant doors, you could smell the wood. You get inside, you could smell the sour apples. To me, y'all, this was magical. Never seen anything like this. These giant vats, these presses. At the time, I didn't know what they were. All I know is I thought it was the coolest thing in the world that these things would press. And then all this juice from all these apples would just squeeze out of it. And then right at the bottom of it, they had these little Dixie cups, and they gave us all a drink of it. In that moment laid the future of my life, but I didn't know it. I tasted real food, I think, for the first time in my life. And it was those apples. I had had apple juice before, but it never tasted like it did from that time since. So they gave us these Dixie cups. And like I said, it was nothing short of wonder for me. It was one of the most indelible moments that I had in my childhood. But now keep in mind, this same little boy went right back home to grandmom's house, went right back to eating boiled gizzards. That's why to this day, I still cannot eat boiled gizzards. Well, let me tell you what this created in me, and to a high extent, my brothers also. Because we pretty much ate the same thing every day. And as a child, I had no idea the extent to which how poor we were. I did know there were times we didn't eat much. And I just didn't know it wasn't normal. And then all of a sudden, there'd be those times where there'd be some church function where everybody brought in a covered dish. And then it was in those rare moments where you really got a chance to eat anything. Well, what that created in me, and to a high extent to my brothers as well, is this healthy relationship to food. For me, what this meant was, as I grew older, I didn't examine the reasons why, but I would always eat till I was stuffed. My brothers did the same thing. As I grew up and I got into high school, every once in a while we'd go to an all-you-can-eat, and it was like, man, you just go in there and be a full-fledged glutton. And it was cool to do it. And believe it or not, my mom and dad by that time were out of the joint and really not the best parents in the world, but they did the best they could given where they came from. So I'm not really dogging them completely. The point that I'm trying to get to right now is that early environment and later on the environment that ensued after that created a very unhealthy relationship to food. My other brothers were very unhealthy and probably still are. And it all stemmed in the fact of when you grew up that kind of way where you had very limited things and you ate. And then later on when mom and dad got out, we basically ate prison food. And so, but the cool thing about prison food is, and I'm dead serious, that's what we ate. What they ate in prison is basically what they, and it was basically, it came from a box. Mm-hmm. It might've been frozen. It was never anything fresh. Never any. I never had fresh food again until I met your mom. But now these unhealthy relationships to food have been ingrained in me. And then in the Army, of course, you know, your buddies, I remember they had an all-you-can-eat fried, well, they turned KFC into an all-you-can-eat outside of Fort Bragg one time. And I remember going with my friends JD, Jorge, Jack, Ronzo, the whole gang. We went in there. That place was all-you-can-eat for one day. We walked out of there. I remember asking JD, man, how much did you eat? He said, I think about two chickens. So that was just one guy, and we got a bunch of us in there. So I grew up. You could get away with that kind of stuff in the Army, but as I grew, I've always had this unhealthy relationship to food. And my weight throughout most of my adult life after getting out of the Army has always been fluctuating. You know, I would stay on a diet for a while, lose it all. Later on, be right back where I, you know. Right now, as I speak to you, I'm about 170 pounds.
Dad weighs less than me right now.
Right, but for a time there, I was well over 240. For a stint there. And then when we moved here to North Carolina, I got down to about 200. And if I got a lot of muscle on me, that's pretty normal. But now I'm down. I haven't been 170 since I graduated basic training. I don't know if it shows in the videos, but honestly,
well, no, because you still wear the same doggone size like pants and shirts and all that stuff. Well, Dad, you got to change clothes.
Well, I told your mom I got to go buy pants because these things are like, I've got the belt pulled as far as it can go.
You
got
to get Ike's pants.
But the point I'm trying to get at right now is that this unhealthy relationship to food that was ingrained early on had become a lifelong problem. And it was today, as I'm going to the gym, your mom was going to go for a jog and I was going to go to the gym at the college. We had a discussion regarding something concerning her. And so I was very, very open about how I feel like I just recently conquered this lifelong unhealthy addiction to food. Now, I know what good food, I know what good food is supposed to taste like. I know because we grow it. Michelle is extremely good at cooking it and making it. And, you know, I will confess that she wants everybody fat but her.
Yep. 'Cause
when you're around her, man, she overdoes it like nobody's business. But she's always been able to restrain herself. For me, that's another matter altogether. If it's something that tastes good, I'm going to eat until I pop, at least until recently. And this is why I'm sharing it with y'all. This is the whole reason why I decided to do this, because I got to believe there's other people out there that have dealt with this too. And I'm going to tell you why I feel like I've crossed the Rubicon in conquering this. As I was sitting in the truck and I'm explaining to her, she had an issue she's dealing with. And I'm telling her, I just now feel that I've conquered this unhealthy food addiction. Got to give a hat tip to 75 Hard and Andy Frisella out there, because that's part of it. Because not only have I done 75 Hard and I'm getting to the shady end of it, I've exceeded what was expected of me by many magnitudes in that program, because I've imposed upon myself this fasting. And I'm going to tell you why I had such a fearful, I didn't cover this before, but I got to cover it now. I was very fearful about the whole notion of fasting, because even though I had done it before in the Army, it was entirely different. yeah, you're being starved in sapper school, but everybody else is too. The first time I ever did a 24-hour fast, it was years ago. I was scared to death about it for all the dumbest reasons, thinking, well, gee, what if I pass out? What if, you know, what if? And then I did it the first time and then never really did it again until the recent months. First time I did a 24-hour fast, I'll be honest with you, it scared me. And then I did it again, and then the fear went down a little bit more. And then I did 48 hours, and I was fearful. Then the first time I did a three-day fast, it almost threw me right back the other way. And the reason why is, I kind of briefly talked about it before, I didn't use the electrolytes, and I nearly screwed myself up in a bad way, where I'm out here doing everything I expect myself to do in an unfasted state. It's entirely different when you're doing 75 hard in a fasted right. state on your third day with no ends or electrolytes.
Which includes two workouts.
So I did that the second time. And then I did it again this last time with James. But what I'm trying to say is that after that third 3-day fast, rather, I felt like I could go after Moby Dick in a rowboat and take the tartar sauce with me. It was at that moment that I knew that I had conquered this unhealthy relationship to food. Because not only did I know that I could fast for 3 days, I knew that at that same time, while fasting, I was still able to do everything that was expected of me, not just my farm chores, but 75 hard on top of it. So it was at that point where I knew that even though I may go to this bakery and do work, no matter the temptation, no matter what, if I can do this thing, then I knew. And I told your mom, and she had something of a eureka moment concerning something she's battling as well. But me exposing myself, and I'll be honest with y'all, as a man, it's tough for me to sit here behind this mic and admit where I'm weak, where I fall short. It's tough. You don't like doing it. But at the same time, I know it's going to be cathartic. But the only reason I'm doing it, the biggest reason I'm doing it, is because I know other people out there have this same unhealthy relationship to food, where you feel like You provide all these reasons, all these things, and you realize at the end of the day it's just an idiotic fear that was rooted in something that goes all the way back to when I'm 7 years old. But I know that I've crossed the Rubicon. I know now I'm able to be in some of the most tempting places, because say what you want about Asheville, there's a lot of really great places to eat around here.
Yeah,
and I'm around them all the time, and I can literally say, no, I'm not going to eat that. Or I have the wherewithal to say, I will eat it, but I'm going to eat it on my terms.
Well, it's a little easier whenever you have to stiff arm Blue Hairs to get to those restaurants.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's also this, I wanted to do this program to let others out there know that if you're battling some food addiction, any kind of addiction, or anything else you may be struggling with, I mean, I know that there's times, at least in these videos or whatever else, I present myself, I'm not trying to be a caricature of who I really am. And I'm not pretending to be somebody I'm not. Now, I do have to kick up the excitement a little bit. Otherwise, it's just going to be boring to watch. You got to make it at least make sense and kick it up a little bit. And I could probably do it a little bit more. But in these podcasts, it does give me the opportunity to lay myself bare, because I know if I had an for the longest time, this unhealthy relationship to food, where I'm constantly on this yo-yo of can't stick with any diet for any period of time, or I stick with it for a specified period of time, and then I'm right back to zero. Now, I really, with the benefit of controlled with a fasting regimen every single day for the most part, except for 1 day a week, with a fasting regimen, and then knowing what I can, knowing the limits of what I'm able to eat, physical activity isn't a problem. I'm a doggone farmer. But knowing at the end of the day that I am able, that the most liberty-minded thing you can do is decide what you will and what you will not put in your mouth, and to have the control And it's been with the benefit of fasting. It's been with the benefit of having a legit plan. And folks, I hope that is a help to all of you folks out there that are suffering with this. All right.
That's another one of Joel's new songs. That one is like his, I guess, alternative variety of music.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to go to the drawing board, son.
You don't like that one, Dad?
Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I love Joel, but yeah, I like the other part.
The words.
I like half of it. I like half of it. I don't like the first part of it. All right, y'all, this part of the show brought to you by Harvest Right Freeze Dryers. We got a link down below, but look, I'm seriously asking y'all to examine those parts of your life. I'm doing it myself. Examine those parts of your life where you know you need work. And I know times are tough. I know inflation's off the chart. That's all the more reason why we need to do these things. I am the best version of myself that I think I've ever been. COVID was a nightmare for most of us. But it turned out to be the best thing that's ever happened to me in terms of what it made me do with my life, the turns I've had to make, the changes I've had to adjust to, all these other things. It was either make a worse version of yourself or find a way to become better. And I like to think that I've chosen the latter. All right, so into your questions. Right off the bat, got one from Alan here. He says, Billy, please keep us updated on the speed reading course. Very interested. I've always had problems with reading retention. I try to conserve the word as well. And, yeah, he also says, also want to thank you for the interview with Tony, a reminder to my own train wreck conversation. And he's basically saying it almost had him in tears. I mean, yeah, Tony really laid himself bare there. So maybe that was a little bit of inspiration for why I did what I did tonight. Absolutely. Praising God for saving him. And, so anyway, another hat tip to Tony. Thank you so much for reaching out, Alan.
Right. Yeah, there were actually quite a few comments about that Tony's interview. People really liked that one. I got one from B. Lynn. She says, I think the lefties may have an advantage on the left-right thing. They live in a right-handed world. Take shifting gears, for example. P.S. I always tell people to buy an Atlas instead of using their phone to get almost anywhere.
That's a real smart thing. And
that's something a lot of truckers do.
Well, I'll tell you what. I remember on my way down to Deep South when that thing started tripping.
Oh, yeah. You guys bought an Atlas, didn't you?
Yeah. And foolishly, it didn't have it to begin with. So, yeah, having those Atlas. But, you know, I wonder these days because I grew up learning. I mean, I remember in eighth grade, my dad had taught me years before how to read a map and, you know, how to get from A to B. And he was really good at it. It was one of those real bonding things I did with my dad. I remember going to Keystone Lake and him having me kind of navigate the way there doing the map. So when I got into eighth grade, I was like, oh, cool, man, I'm learning it here, but I already know because I learned from my dad. Mm. This one here, Mary Lou, Billy, I was describing the 18-day compost turning method to my mom, and she asked, what about the loss of nitrogen to the air with the turning of the compost pile? Perhaps a topic to cover in a compost video. Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. That's really not your biggest problem. We kind of halfway hit on it a little bit as far as nitrogen going into the air. That's not the issue. Now, if you're one of the people claiming global warming and stuff like this, I tend to think there's atmospheric injections and all those things. I believe they're playing with the weather. I think there's a whole lot going on there, but I'm going to hit this from a different angle. So when you're doing the right composting method, you're losing, it ain't the nitrogen you're losing. Let's say all things are perfect in that pile, you're losing 80% CO2 to the atmosphere from bacteria, and you're losing 20% to the nitrogen in the best circumstances. Now, if you have an anaerobic pile, you're losing 80%. You're losing 80% of CO2 from that pile. But look, here's the worst part about it. If you're believing what they say about the greenhouse gases and all the others, well, you're also putting methane, which you're not getting in an aerobic pile. You're only getting that in an anaerobic pile. You're getting methane. You're getting nitrous oxide. You're getting sulfur dioxide. You're getting all these things that only produce when you have an anaerobic pile. So if you're putting out things, you're keeping most of that carbon in the soil if you have an anaerobic pile.
I think she might be asking it from a different... She's like, I think she might be asking, like, well, all your nitrogen is escaping. How is that going to benefit your plant?
We're not worried about nitrogen so much.
Yeah, the nitrogen, the high nitrogen stuff is to heat the pile up, and it's for, like, it's the party food for the bacteria. The high nitrogen isn't there necessarily to benefit the plants later on down the line. That's what the bacteria and the fungi are for.
Okay, so in case I did get it wrong, which is entirely possible.
It could have went either way.
Yeah, so if I did, I'm glad you pointed that out because she may have meant exactly what you answered. So, hey, you know what? No matter where you stand in that continuum, I think we got you covered.
Got one from Uncle Neckbone. Pimps, look into how China is basically parking floating cities just over the line into international waters and purposely fishing them to oblivion. Ish is getting crazy, is what he says. Keep them pimp hands strong, good sirs.
Well, you know, I guess I'm not aware of that story in particular, but it wouldn't shock me none. The things are getting real, and it seems like, you know what I find curious is that the more real, in quotations, they become, the more it seems people are acquiescing. Or I suspect a lot of people are also becoming a little bit tone deaf.
Yeah.
And I get it. Especially people in the preparedness and the homesteading world, they're sick of hearing about it completely.
Yeah.
It's gotten to that point where they don't even want to hear this anymore, and they've tuned it out to their own detriment, I think. Because think about it, from the enemy standpoint, this is now a war of attrition.
Yeah, it
from
is.
Their point.
Yeah.
They just wore you down to get you to the point where you no longer care about preparedness.
But
if you can make it a lifestyle, well, you're always ready.
You can't win a guerrilla war, and we're on the homeland. There's that. There's that benefit we have.
Yeah, there is that. But, you know, unlike the time in 1776 where everybody was at least had some grounding to the land.
Well, yeah.
We are at a point right now where, what is it, 20% of America lives rurally. Or 10%. I don't remember.
I thought 10% was high.
Okay, so 10% live rurally. Of that 10%, less than 1% of 1% are even close to self-sufficient or even slightly prepared. So the numbers are highly skewed, even though it looks like these pendulums are swinging in the right ways. Got to also consider the fact that, you know, by and large, most people have, quote, gone country. They just...
Yeah.
Move to a suburb from a suburban site into the country.
Their neighbors are just further away.
Yeah, that's the only difference. Yep. That's the only difference.
Got one from, is it your turn?
Yeah.
Oh.
We got Cliff here. He's asking, he's from Haskell back in Oklahoma. He says, I'm afraid that attending the microscopy courses you took is going to be a little too much. And I understand that. He's got a wife with Parkinson's and stuff like that. Can't really leave the ranch at any period, but he's wondering. He's got microscopes and everything available. He's wondering if there's a book that can teach you how to do this. No, not that I'm aware of, because there is a certain amount of tutorials that go on in addition to this. Now, I have heard, but I have not personally examined it. I heard Matt Powers is teaching a course. I haven't examined that course. I haven't looked at it myself, but it might provide some answers. I don't know what he expresses in this course, and I don't even know if it's worthwhile. Well, I've heard good things, but then again, I don't know personally, so I don't know what to tell you on that score.
This also might help. I just saw today that Dr. Elaine Ingham's course is half off right now. So there's that.
Well,
ecosystem restoration thing that's half off right now. So
that ain't what he's looking for.
That might. Oh, okay.
And frankly, I don't recommend that course.
I didn't know if that was different than what I'm taking.
No, if it's included in the package you have.
Okay.
But that ecosystem, if that's all you're going to get,
it's
don't waste
your money.
It's
not the course. It's a package.
Okay. Well, ecosystem is part of the package we're part of, but still it's quite expensive and a lot of people are not going to be able to do that. I've heard things about people going about Matt Powers. I haven't examined it. I don't know if it's worthwhile or not. I haven't yet. I can't endorse it because I haven't looked into it.
Jeff Lawton also has a documentary called Soil, I believe. That might be highly beneficial to you. I mean, anything you get that's Jeff Lawton's is going to be highly beneficial to you. But actually looking, if you examine what Jeff Lawton says whenever he talks about composting or soils or anything like that, you're getting the same information, just not like, here's what you look for on a microscope.
Yeah, Jeff will definitely get you across the finish line. You just won't be able to look under the microscope. The reason why the microscopy skills, you know what? We could absolutely, I am so confident at this point, I know that I can produce biocomplete compost and not even look under a microscope. I know I'm good enough at it, and I make pile after pile after pile. I really know that I can make some bomb compost, but a lot of people, you got to get practice at this stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you know what it looks like. I mean, I know that I can make really, really awesome compost. And Jeff Lawton, like William said, is teaching you the same exact stuff. You just have no ability. What makes the microscopy skills really, really cool is that you can assess ground ahead of time.
Yeah.
You find out what microbes are missing, and then you can add them in.
Yeah.
I'm going to put the whole soil food web in no matter what.
Right.
But you're going to know how much more you need to go heavier on certain things.
You can also do a lot of that indication, though, just by looking at your spot, too.
You can.
Yeah, because if it's like, okay, if there's no vegetation at all, you know you're starting at pretty much ground zero.
Right, you're going to need the whole doggone thing. But if you make really, really good compost, but where the microscopy skills also come into handy is when you're making teas. You don't know if your concentration is good enough.
Yeah.
You really don't know if your concentration is good enough unless you are looking at it under a microscope. Unless you know that compost is just fantastic. But now I can quantify and know, okay, how many times do I need to dunk this stuff in here to get the numbers I need?
Yeah, be careful with the compost. Like, seriously, if you don't have a microscope and you can't look at it, don't even attempt the compost teas, because you could really just be moving yourself backwards.
You could, right. Let's say all you got in there, let's say you don't have a fungal component, and you're just going to add more bacteria to a bacterial system that's already too heavy.
And it could be anaerobic bacteria.
Right.
Like, it could have gone anaerobic because you went too long or you didn't go long enough. Or, I mean, there's a lot of people doing those fermented teas as well.
Well, those teas, if you're making a compost tea, that's when when you're making an extract, it's less consequential.
Right.
If you know you have really, really awesome compost, then the chances of it going anaerobic are lower. But when you start messing around with teas, they are much more difficult to make. And I'm still not perfect on it myself. I mean, by the time it's all said and done, I guarantee I will be. I can't dismiss the importance of repetition, doing it over and over and over and over again. Like, I did a thing today on Patreon where I'm talking about, okay, I screwed up. I tried another recipe on this compost. It didn't work out. And here's how I'm fixing it. So you have got to be able to try this thing with different materials, different times of year, before you become an expert at anything. But also with this tease and everything else, it's a little more, there's a higher degree of difficulty, because if you go anaerobic, you'll know it. Mm-hmm. And like William said, if you look under that microscope and I see a bunch of ciliates floating around, I don't see any fungi. Okay, I know that all my fungi had just gotten eaten up by the anaerobic bacteria. But yeah, there's a lot you can do without a microscope too.
Yeah, which actually is also a benefit as far as like the tea versus extraction thing, because the extraction, like if you have good compost, you can do that right away.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's no reason you can't start doing the extraction.
Right. If you have really great, I'm glad you pointed that out, because you can honestly take that compost and stretch it out way further.
Yeah. Over and over again.
Extract, and you have less danger, but it really doesn't hurt to know if you got. You really ought to know what you're doing with this compost, though.
Yeah. Got one from Jesse Workshop on the Fountain app. Have my own weather station because I also found Trust Weather Reports. I think she meant to say I don't trust weather reports. Our weather station registered over 100 for 3 weeks straight and 110 on Wednesday in Deming, New Mexico. It's a real heat wave. Last year wasn't this bad. Only been here 3 years, but this is harder.
For the life of me.
That's exactly what Deborah was saying today. The lady I was talking to that lives in New Mexico. Yeah.
It was, Folks, I really believe they're playing games here. And all you folks that live in deserts, you need to be thinking about your water storage. I mean that in the most massive way. Think about this. If they were to just have a power outage in the desert,
yeah,
and you don't have air conditioners, okay, we're not even talking about the means to move water. Okay, so yeah. You got a pumping station. What if that ain't counting? Folks, you got to be thinking about that water in a massive, you need gold, guns, and a getaway plan, as Gerald Celente says. But you need to be thinking about your water and an escape route if things go sideways in a desert. That's a big deal.
Especially if you don't live in a rainforest like we do.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right here, we got one from Ricard. We've heard from him before. He's from Sweden. I like this dude. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. It's either, I don't know if it's Ricard or Rickard. He says, yeah, I got a couple of questions for you guys. Chicken tractor on steroids is a viable option for me. I live far away from everything and have no restaurants nearby. So my question is, can you grow perennials to feed your chickens? He's also saying, hey, he doesn't dig the politics we talk about, but he sticks around for the information. So, yeah, we cover it all so you can kind of absorb what you think is useful.
I have a Swedish brother-in-law who didn't enjoy our politics either.
Really? He yeah. listens?
No, he didn't listen, but he gets the gist when I'm around.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, so, you know, it's pretty cool, though. I mean, it's always, and hat tip to you, Ricard, or Rickard. It's a hat tip to you. Because you're demonstrating something that most people can't. Most people, especially in America, they hear one thing they disagree with and they will throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
And they won't listen to another word. So, you know, credit to you and folks, we can learn. This is something we can learn from. Yep. All right. So regarding your point, this is why I highly suggest that everybody out there, regarding that chicken tractor on steroids, I would highly suggest for you and everybody else out there to read the Independent Farmstead. But if you don't want to read the book, at least go to their website and get the list of all the perennials they grow. I could go out here and collect my own list, but why? They've already done it. So Sean and Beth Doherty at their One Cow Revolution website, I believe it is, they're going to have a PDF that I think it costs $10, and they will give you a comprehensive list of all the things you can grow to feed not only your chickens and pigs, but also yourself. And they grow in really awful soil.
Yeah.
I mean, just Tramontino squashes alone. That thing alone, I mean, man, they're so prolific and they will grow in the worst soil you can imagine. That's just one thing. Kushaw squashes, they taste great. And in fact, I mean, they make pies up here in these mountains with them.
Yeah, you plant either one of those. Yeah, you plant either one of those, you're going to have storage issues.
And well, and one cool thing you might want to know, Ricard, and anybody else out there, is that a lot of these things are meant, first of all, pests don't mess with them. And another cool thing is that when you pick them, you can store them in a garage, in a barn for the most part. Without ever having to worry about this thing going bad. We had some out here for almost a year.
Yeah, they made it almost a year. The issue is that our garage gets a little hot, especially in the morning.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that issue, but honestly, that's what you select for also. So your best ones, you know, if they go a little bit rotten, who cares? Pigs and chickens are going to eat that anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then here's another cool thing about using it in the chicken tractor on steroids is that you can use the whole thing.
Yeah.
The skin, everything. What I would do and what I've done when it comes to some of these squashes and stuff like that is I literally just put them in there, just cut them in half, and then the rest of it's going to get composted anyway, and the chickens will clean it out.
Yeah.
So let them do all the work. But yeah, Sean and Beth Doherty, One Cow Revolution, I think is the name of their website. Go check it out. Get that PDF, and you are going to find a bunch of really, really awesome seeds that you probably haven't heard about. So definitely check it out. Thank you for reaching out.
I got one from Melodious. Speaking of the chicken tractor on steroids, she's got a question. We have a great resource for old donuts. Could that be used as the base of the compost/food pile in a chicken tractor on steroids? I know they aren't primarily eating the starch, but the bugs attracted by it and born in it.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword. You want to be careful about using too much sugar out there on your birds. And if
you're
also
in your compost,
right? Exactly. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Now the birds are probably going to consume that sugar, but
yeah.
if you're going to do it, what I've done before, and I don't know what kind of donuts you got out there. Yeah, I use donuts a lot, and I have, but I try to use them sparingly. And in that system, you don't have to worry about protein so much, because after you get a couple of weeks into it, they're getting most of their protein out of that pile. But in there, yeah, just be really cautious. I mean, it might be a pain in the butt. It may be more pain than what it's worth, but I would definitely try to knock some of that sugar off.
Yeah. Got one from Stubbs Milling Co. How is it from Canada when the jet stream is hooking south before it gets to Arkansas, then north before it reaches Alabama? I agree, Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Oh,
talking about that fires coming from the...
I'll tell you what else. I was listening to Dr. Naomi Wolf. She was definitely from the leftist tradition. Now, I've been a fan of hers in the past because for the longest time, I would always hear her speak truth to power. She wasn't so invested to the left where she just lost her brain, where she would probably, most people would say she came from the left side of the equation. But she said, look, I grew up in California where I know what wildfires look like.
Mm-hmm.
She's now in New York, and she says, look, I know what it looks like to have the fallout from wildfires, and what I'm looking up in the sky has nothing to do with wildfires. In fact, you go on to, I mean, she's not an alarmist, but man, the stuff I heard coming out of Naomi Wolf's mouth as of late.
Yeah.
And she, and folks, for those that don't know, she's on the left side of the equation, or historically has been. She's like, look, you could have knocked me over with a feather when she says it wouldn't shock me if they just pull a nuclear war to keep from having the next election. This is not a woman that talks that way.
Yeah.
When I heard her say that to Seth Holthouse, I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Wow. That's crazy. I got one from Miss Patriot 3367 on the YouTube channel. In quotations, they are under investigation should not be a reason to pull support from Sound of Freedom. Y'all know we are all probably under investigation from this corrupt system. One of the criticisms I saw.
I've heard a lot of things. Some of it may be true, some not. I'll be perfectly honest with you. There are things about the people that are involved in this movie that give me pause. But at the end of the day, like I said from the very beginning, for the first time ever, how long have we been, since we started a YouTube channel, yeah, we've been advocates for Vets for Child Rescue. Since we started, I am so glad that now the whole notion of child sex trafficking is on the lips of so many others. Now, do I wish that this movie would have had an emphasis on the Epstein types and stuff like that? Sure, but at least now the whole thing is on the lips of the American public for the first time in history. For the first time ever, everybody that has any sense is at least aware of this movie. Now, there are people involved in this thing that do give me pause, but I can't concern myself with that right now. What I am concerned about is now this is something I can build on.
Yeah.
Now this is something there is.
Now you don't have to introduce the topic to people. People now know the topic and can build off that.
Now when I go into deeper topics that stem from this, like satanic ritual abuse.
Yeah.
I now have a segue in which I can build on.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully folks, yeah, like I said, there are people involved with this thing. In fact, I talked to Ike about this quite a bit. There are people involved with this thing that give me pause, but at the end of the day, at least the word is getting out.
Right.
But I just never did understand, how is it that Craig Sawyer for Vets for Child Rescue, second he puts up a website trying to get funding, they take him down immediately, and then all of a sudden this guy who's linked up with Glenn Beck, he's on the lips of everybody. He's been that way. What am I missing here?
Yeah.
How are they taking him off? So, yeah, I got questions about certain things, but, hey, I am not going to dismiss the fact that for the first time ever, we have a very asleep population that are now waking up to this dreadful thing called child sex trafficking.
Yep. I got another one on the YouTube channel from Stubbs Milling Co. In 2020, I said we have at most 10 years, but probably 5 years before something happens that no one is ready for or will even see coming. It will be random at the most random time while everyone gets burnt out talking from both sides and the prepper homesteading community starts eating itself alive because no one wants to trust anymore. Everyone will get tired of hearing, get ready, it's coming. God told Noah that they will deny and not look at the signs, that when the times The time comes, it will all be too late. Do not worry about saving them. They cannot save themselves.
Well, it's funny. It's funny that he brings that up, because we kind of brought that same thing, is that now this war of attrition has gotten to the point where the people who were on board before are now checking off, checking out. I think Stubbs hit it right out of the park on that one. I think it'll go down exactly as he said. And that's exactly what I've been waiting for, is that right now everybody is just sick. Like, there are people out there saying, can we get it on already? If it's going to happen, let's just get it on. And I live by Jack Spirko's mantra. This is a way to live if times get tougher, even if they don't.
Yeah.
So I'm not waiting with bated breath. I'm not holding my life waiting for the first shot to be fired. I don't do that. This is my lifestyle. This is my family's lifestyle. I am wondering, though, the same as he is. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you got people out there waiting to jump on one another. Now, some of these people on YouTube, they are bringing it on themselves.
Yeah.
They are bringing it on themselves. When you're out there claiming you used to be a homesteader, now you're a preparedness survivor. I'm not going to get on that.
I checked yesterday, I think. I checked a couple YouTube channels just to see, like, when's the last homesteading video they put out, or like anything to do with any kind of homesteading?
They used to be homesteaders?
Yeah. It's been a minute. It's been, and even homesteading might be in the title of their name.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do that because they know this is where, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, overnight, I could sit here and, you know, I want to give a shout out, man. I think it was Goshen Prepping Homestead that gave us a shout out for the fact that I was shocked. Actually, you could knock me over with a feather, where he put us on the spot and said, hey, look at these guys. They got this video that became hot. They were talking about the topics. And then the very next video they put out, that's not what I do. I know what would get us a million subscribers tomorrow. I know exactly what that is, but I got to sleep in my own bed at night. I'm not going to be an alarmist, because when I really believe this, son, when the dust clears, if it clears, and if we have any functioning, whatever, and whatever happens, the people that were out here being alarmists that don't know what they're talking about, these same homesteads you're talking about, that I know, I came from the preparedness background. I have a military background. I put all this to work before, and I know friends that have been in this a long, long time. You know who's full of crap and who ain't. And it sure is funny that the ones that are the biggest champions, like, rah, 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 this is what's going to happen, this is what you need to do, don't have a day's experience in any of it.
Yeah. On a happier note, I got one from DLT942. I used your bone sauce on cedar and other logs around my garden areas, and deer stayed away. I also planted deer-friendly ground cover at the back of our property to give something to enjoy.
That's another little technique from, also, it's a permaculture technique where you want to leave wildlife corridors.
Yeah.
But it's also another one where people like Akiva Silver will basically, I need to send that dude some bone sauce.
No kidding.
He will absolutely. He doesn't have much deer pressure anyway where he is, he says.
Oh, really?
And but in addition to that, he does provide wildlife corridors a little ways away, but he keeps a human presence, whether it's mowing or whatever the case may be, between the area where the deer, where he wants them to be, and the areas where he doesn't want them to be. Mm. And generally, it seems to work for him. And he has other methods and techniques that involve fencing. But if I can avoid all that, hey, y'all, a good livestock guardian dog goes a real good way in keeping those deer out, too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But you just can't let them run anywhere they want to go.
Right.
All right. Man, this thing went way longer than we intended. Yeah. But it's what happens, y'all. I mean, hopefully everybody's digging this. Hey, if you want to tickle us pink, leave us a review out there. Wherever you are, please leave a review. It helps us, I think.
They say it helps us.
Yeah.
I don't know if it does or not.
But apparently this show is growing like nobody's business.
Sharing the show helps.
Yeah. Go out there, tell everybody about what we're doing. Till next time, y'all, stay alert.
Stay alive.